Welcome to Call It Like I See It, presented by Disruption Net. And since we're dropping this on January 2nd, 2020, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I'm James Keys, and today we continue our discussion on what we saw in some of the biggest stories in December. We released part one of this discussion a few days ago as episode 11. And in that part, we looked at Nike's release of Modesty Swimwear and the lack of controversy surrounding that. Iran doing joint naval drills with Russia and China and what that could mean for America in the future or the present, and Eddie Murphy's return to SNL and some of the things that arose from that. I still have Tunde here with me. And another story we wanted to touch on was Christianity Today, that publication calling for Trump's impeachment and removal. Now, this is a publication that caters to evangelical Christians who have been among Trump's most loyal supporters, at least since he's been elected, or, you know, at the ballot box and since he's been elected. So Tunde, Christianity Today coming out against him, is that a big deal?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty big deal.
Interesting. Well, why do you say that?
It's interesting. I think like any person who's in power, whether politics or anything else, their power is only assured through support by certain groups, individuals, all that stuff, you know, in any society. So I think...
Particularly our society.
And particularly our society. And just the way our system of politics is, right? That's why they're called special interest groups, all these different groups. And I think, obviously, the evangelical Christian group is a massive group in this country. I think about 20 to 25% of Americans identify themselves as evangelical Christians. So having their support has meant a lot for politicians throughout basically the last century or so. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of groups that the Trump administration has targeted for support. And most of those groups have some sort of warring factions within them that are public. And I think the evangelical group has been one group that's been very stalwart and unified behind their support for President Trump. So the reason why this was a big deal was this was the first time in the almost 3 years of his presidency that there was a public crack in that wall of support among the evangelical community. And that's why I think it was a big deal. And I think what I watch is not so much now that this has come out, you know, so much the evangelical community. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how they kind of deal with each other on this. But I found it more interesting to look at the president and his reaction to this.
Oh, yeah.
That's what told me this was important. This is one of the few times that I felt like the president is a little bit scared of what he's seeing, that this thing could fracture. So to me, that's what made it a big deal, was really the president's reaction to all this.
Well, yeah, I mean, one thing I've said many times, you know, if this wasn't real, if this wasn't like the stakes are, you know, reality, Trump, the Trump experience, it would be very entertaining because Trump, he lacks subtlety. And, you know, the crazy thing about it, like when things like this happen, like you said, his reaction was crazy because his reaction was essentially to reveal the unspoken transaction that is appears to be the basis of his undying support. The transaction being, you look the other way on how I act, how I treat people and my morality or lack thereof. And I'll give you just judges and policymakers and policy that is will allow you to influence the law, or have the law be catered to Christian interests, so to speak, or certain types of Christian interests. And he came right to that immediately, saying, "Hey, how you gonna as out of all I've done for you?" And it's like, "Hey, that's what it is. It's the transaction." And so that when you look at it like that, and he puts it out front and center like that, like, "Hey, no. This is not about my morality or lack thereof. You know, this is not about that I treat people like, you know, dirt. This is about me giving you stuff, and I've been giving you stuff." And he went right to that, I think, did reveal his, I don't know if I'd go as far as you to say fear, but it revealed that he was definitely bothered by it and noted it as something that could be a problem.
Now, and that's a great point about the transactional nature, I think, of the way the president has reacted to this, because I think we see it with other parts of the president's life and personality, their very transactional nature of dealing with a lot of subjects. And so it fascinates me watching it all, because I think obviously people support a leader for different reasons. And yeah. I think the evangelical community is no different than any other. It's not a monolith. There's a lot of moving parts within it. There's a lot of people that are part of that organization and that belief structure for their own various personal reasons. And we can't blanket them as all one, you know, that they all think in the same way or act in the same way. So,
and it's their right. I mean, you can support people for whatever reason you want. That's your right.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I'm wondering, because I think, you know, in these dances of relationships that we all play in our lives and in society, you know, the reaction to something is just as important as the something that happened, right?
Yeah, oftentimes more.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm curious to see what the transactional nature of the reaction of Donald Trump, like, how will the community respond? Will it mm-hmm. create more fissure and fractures, or will they coalesce and kind of regroup around him? And I found it interesting just in the last few days, just looking at some of the chatter out there that you know, it's like I saw this one thing that the president tweeted that was like, it was a picture of Jesus with a bunch of suitcases and boxes. And it was like, the meme was like, Obama kicked me out, but Trump let me back in. Yeah. And it was just interesting because I'm thinking like, okay, here we go. Now he's going to start doing the comparison thing. And I was, you know, I'm so great for you guys versus everyone else and all this. you know, that's what smacked to me is this desperation. Like, wow, he must be that scared to lose these folks. And I feel like it goes back to the books we read and talk about, like this, you know, whether it's 48 Laws of Power or, you know, any of these books from Stephen Covey and all this. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, people normally tend, they're pragmatic. So people normally then tend to respond positively to people that are calm and who show confidence.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of people that get attracted to bluster and to being bombastic and all that, those type of leaders initially. But over time, you know, this is where I think it's going to be interesting, this next year of Donald Trump's presidency, and with some of these issues, with some of these bases fracturing, like the evangelicals, because if he responds with what is seen as confidence and a kind of stoicism, he'll attract one type of supporter to mm-hmm. stay with him. Mm-hmm. If he reacts a different way, the way that we've seen him react, I'm just curious to see how does that work? Like, will he?
Well, he'll probably attract another type, you know, that and actually, I mean, what this does reveal for us, it draws a clear line in the sand between the evangelicals or Christians in general that view the religion more in the morality espoused by Christ.
Yeah.
Versus who view it in from a more of a controlling standpoint, that it's about making people do certain things or not do certain things more than it's about being kind or, you know, or taking care of the poor or whatever. Because there are a lot of Christians, evangelicals and otherwise that view religion as, you know, taking care of the meek shall inherit the earth, you know, and those types of things. But there are also a lot that view it from a control standpoint. And just the overall, anytime you organize some type of belief system into a structure, the people who are in it for the control aspect tend to rise to the top because that's the purpose of organization in that sense, is to to keep everything in and to organize things so things can move in one direction. You could be effective in that way. Like if everybody's just kind of following their heart, then it's hard to organize and to move the ball forward on things. It's not impossible, but nonetheless. So the people who are in it for the control, the people who want to use to view their religion as a way to make policy and make law consistent with their religion, with their beliefs, the people who want to impart their belief system on others, I think would be very interested in the transactional nature of this. You know,
yeah, and I always found those kind of folks interesting because those are the same people that, you know, I remember, you know, when Obama was president, there's all this, you know, oh, you know, we're going to bring Sharia law to the United States, you know, and have some sort of theocracy here. Mm-hmm. And there were small towns in the Midwest that were, you know, putting city ordinances that they wouldn't allow Sharia law in the United States. And it's just such a far-fetched fear. And I'm thinking, first of all, we have a separation of church and state in the First Amendment, which says the Congress shall not, you know, regulate or create any religion or anything legislatively. So clearly no religion will, you know, the laws in this country are secular from its founding. Mm-hmm. No matter what anyone wants to say, just, you know, go read the First Amendment of the Constitution. But then the idea that, you know, a religion that has maybe a 2% or less population in this country somehow is going to come in and put their, you know, we were going to have their laws, you know, of their religion.
Oh, but you miss it, man.
No, but my point is just saying that it's often those people that are fearful. It's all a projection, right?
Of the correct, way exactly.
Like they're projecting, like they're so scared of that, but then they would love to their own religion and make that the law.
That's why they see that. They want to make their religion the law. And
oh, so of course.
If someone
that's why the guy in Alabama, you know, when he was thrown out for putting the Bible on the courthouse steps, a lot of people got mad. But then if you look at the First Amendment, you shouldn't have, you know, taxpayer dollars funding religious stuff on public property. That's just a fact of the way our system works. But getting back to this article at hand, that's what really struck out to me was this article was the first public fissure in this evangelical community. I think between those who, like you said, look at Christianity for the morality and the teachings of Christ versus those who do see maybe themselves as putting up with the negatives of the president's behavior for the benefits that they see from the transactional kind of way. Like, all right, I know he's rude on Twitter. I know he does things that I wouldn't accept from other people, other leaders, and that I would criticize, you know, if it was someone I didn't like, I'd definitely be criticizing this. But because of the judges, because of this, because of that, and the economy and everything else, I can overlook it. And one of the things I did a few highlights of the article because I thought they just spoke to some profound things. One of the things I highlighted, it says he himself, meaning they're referring to President Trump, has admitted to immoral actions in business and his relationship with women, about which he remains proud. And I thought of that, like, because Christians are so great with forgiveness.
But it requires repentance, though. You can't.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, Christians will accept a man who has sinned if he's remorseful and he asks for forgiveness. And so here they're very specific, saying he remains proud of his immoral acts. And then it says his Twitter feed alone, with its habitual string of mischaracterizations, lies, and slanders, is a near perfect example of a human being who is morally lost and confused. I was like, wow, when I read that.
Yeah.
You know, like, they just broke it down. And then,
well, let me jump in because the plot thickens, you know, the plot thickens on this, because shortly thereafter, you know, the article that we're speaking of, you know, came out, you know, in the Christianity Today, the Christian Post, which is, I guess, the largest publication came out defending Trump, which caused the resignation of their political editor. And the defense of Trump, you look at it on one hand and say, okay, well, that's part of it. I mean, there's a split, obviously. So there's going to be people saying, hey, this is wrong. And then there's going to be people saying this right. But one thing you pointed out to me, which I'd love to get your thoughts on, was that the Christian Post in 2016, before he got elected, laid out all the reasons why why Christians should not support Donald Trump. And they're the same stuff we're talking about.
Yeah. So here, let's tell this for the audience. There's an article from February of 2016.
And this will be linked to in the show notes on our website, on the callitlikeiseeit.com for this show.
So let's think about what was going on in February of 2016. Remember, this is when, and this is what I love about people, when memory is so short, because right now the Democratic Party is a mess with their primaries, right? And they're all falling all over each other and fighting and all that. But remember, in 2016, there were like 17, 18 Republicans that were running for president on that stage, and they had to have two separate debates at the beginning and all that. So by February, I think that the field was narrowed down a bit, but they might have still had at least 7 or 8 people. You know, so Trump was one of many choices at that time. Mm-hmm. So going back, that's why I want to kind of put it in context and remind us, because it feels like February 2016 was like 2 decades ago, and it's barely 3 years ago. And so the Christian Post had an article back then. The headline is "Donald Trump is a scam. Evangelical voters should back away."
CP. And these are the people that are defending Trump now.
These are the people that are defending him. And so that's what I was joking with you when we were talking about this stuff on the phone, was this is another example of kind of the Lindsey Grahamification of certain mindsets where people and people like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz, you know, is one thing if you were kind of quiet about Donald Trump in the 2016 campaign and then you're supporting him now and you, and you know, whatever you feel he benefits you, you know, I can live with that. I the hypocrisy of the people that were going out of their way to say how bad this guy was and falling all over themselves over that and that he would ruin America and all that, that are now, you know, kissing his backside because they wanna kiss the ring and be at the throne of power.
Those
and
are defending him.
That are like, man. And so I look at this Christian Post a similar way, where I look at them as inauthentic in a sense, because I read this article and I welcome the audience to go look at the link. I'm just reading some highlights. Trump is a misogynist and philanderer. He demeans women and minorities. His preferred forms of communications are insults, obscenities, and untruths. While Christians have been guilty of all of these, we, unlike Trump, acknowledge our sins, ask for forgiveness, and seek restitution with the aid of the Holy Spirit and our community of believers. It just goes into why he, and this is a great one. Trump claims he will protect Christians. We already have a protector.
It's all the same stuff. Like, you could copy and paste the themes of this and put it into the Christianity Today piece. It's all of the stuff that Christianity Today is saying, hey, this is why this guy's bad news. Let's get away. The Christian Post was saying in 2016, and now Christian Post is saying Christianity Today, you guys are full of it. Trump is our guy. And now I'll tell you this, though. You kind of can understand this. And this is something that I actually would talk about, you know, let's say, you know, 10 years ago. But it's just historically the Republican Party, since, you know, pretty much Reagan really made it explicit, has courted the religious right, so to speak, which has been the evangelicals and other primarily Christian sects. But they've courted them. But historically, they courted them for their votes. But then once they got into office, they would really just govern like capitalist Republicans, you know, like just the normal stuff. You know, they protect big business. You know, they do all that stuff. And they just wouldn't be actively promoting the things like marriage equality or whatever. They would pull back on that stuff and they would support other efforts, but they wouldn't actively try to move things forward on the religious, like with the Supreme Court justices they were appointing. If you look at the ones Bush appointed, these guys are business guys. You know, they're big business guys much more than they are religious conservatives type of thing. What Trump has made good on his, like, he is appointing people that are unqualified to be judges. Like, this is a big thing where you're seeing this, where he's appointing people that are unqualified. But their qualification is that they want to overrule abortion, or that they, you know, have these viewpoints that they just want on the bench. And the biggest question a lot of times is, like, this person's never practiced law. So how is this person going to be a federal judge for life? But he is delivering on that. And Mitch McConnell's ramming all these people through. So they are getting out of it for the first time in 40 years. They're getting out of it what they were trying to get out of it in the first place, when they supported Reagan, when they supported H.W. Bush, when they supported George W. Bush. But those guys kind of played them, whereas Trump has delivered, you know. And so I can understand it. I think the problem is that Christians oftentimes don't view themselves as just every other interest group. You know, they say ours comes from a higher place. But they're acting now just like every other interest group, saying, hey, you know, this person's delivering for me, so I'll put up with, you know, whatever nonsense they are. Like, when that is big business community, nobody bats an eye because that's just what they do. When that's labor unions, nobody bats an eye because that's just what they do. But when the Christians say, hey, no, we're coming at this not just from policy, but also we are trying to be Christ-like, then it's like, well, hold on. This guy, is this the right horse to bet on here? If you're going to still straddle both lines or try to straddle both lines, is this the guy to bet on?
Well, and I'll take it a little further too. I mean, it's a great point you make about Christians being an interest group, and I would say, you know, every religion, I guess, could argue that, right? The Jewish community and Muslim community, they all have their, you know, I'm sure their lobbies and their organizations. But
I'm saying they are one, but they historically cast themselves as not just like every other.
Of course, because remember, religion is a very delicate subject, because if you're a believer in whatever faith it is to you, that's bigger than anything else, right? So if I'm very religious, there's a certain that subject and topic takes priority over something like you're saying, like an oil lobby or a lobby for, you know, the Chamber of Commerce, let's say. Mm-hmm. Like we can, like you're saying, that's secular, that doesn't hold the same emotional weight to us as individuals as, let's say, our religion. But it's interesting you say it, because I find that the transactional nature of all of it, you know, and I've said this to some of my friends who are very conservative, if it wasn't Donald Trump and it was a different Republican president, I don't think we'd have seen anything different in policies. Like, let's say the Supreme Court justices, and I know you're talking about a lot of the lower court picks, and there's a lot of those, so we don't have time to go through it. But let's say just the two Supreme Court justices who have been picked under Donald Trump, Neil Gorsuch and Justice Kavanaugh. To me, both of those guys are dyed-in-the-wool business conservatives. They come from Federalist Society types. That's true. And they're not religious zealots. So that's where it goes to me. I don't see how his administration will be different than any others, other than the fact that Donald Trump is very smart on how to court these different groups. And he's very smart at how he speaks and how he markets to them. Like you're saying, unlike past Republican presidents in our lifetime, you know, let's say the last 40, 50 years or so, who have courted them, you know, the religious groups during the campaign process. And then once they get in office, it's kind of like, all right, well, I'm just going back to business as usual. I think George W. Bush probably came the closest when he was in office, he still took care of the religious, you know, with the faith-based initiatives and all that.
Yeah.
But clearly Trump, because I think Trump...
Well, he has them in his office all the time, meeting with them. He makes them feel part of the process, for
correct.
Sure.
But and also, he's just done things that I think are aggressive. And I'm not saying aggressive in a positive or negative way. I'm just saying it's an aggressive move to, let's say, just announce that the capital of... We're moving our embassy to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
From Tel Aviv. Like, that's something that no other U.S. president wanted to touch. Like, all right, I'm not going to piss off the Arabs and everyone else doing that. And Trump's attitude is like, I don't care. I'm doing it. And so in one sense, I can appreciate and understand why the evangelical community is so behind him, because I could see, you know, if I was part of that community and I have for the first time a president who's swinging an axe to a lot of these kind of sacred cows, like we can't piss off the Muslims in Jerusalem because, you know, we don't want to move the embassy there. And Trump's like, I don't care. I'm doing it. Then it's like, well, all right, he's our guy.
You know, yeah, because like, he doesn't buy into measured analysis. He doesn't buy into risk reward. He's like, hey, you guys want this? Sure, fine. There's a downside, but there's no real upside. I don't care. Yeah, you know, I'll do it anyway.
And see, this is the interesting thing too, because in the Christian Post article from 2016, you know, they ended it pretty much with this line. It says, Trump, an admirer of Vladimir Putin and other dictatorial leaders, may claim to be your friend and protector now, but as history indicates, without your full support, he will turn on you and use whatever power is within his means to punish you. Now, reading that today, that they wrote that in 2016, I was like, wow, they called out his personality pretty well in general. And I felt like, because we've seen it with everything, right? I mean, he's still beaten up. As of like 2 days ago, he was tweeting about John McCain, who apparently died a year ago, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, obviously the guy goes after people, but... It was interesting because reading that, you know, again, the president's tweets right after the Christian Today article came out last week were so like, you know, he's calling it a far left publication and that this and that. You know, I'm just thinking like a publication titled Christianity Today. Like, come on, man. That's like calling Black Enterprise, you know,
far right. Right. You know, yeah. Like,
we understand you don't have to like them now that they said something against you, but to go this like extreme now with your response.
Well, but no, but that's part of his brilliance, though.
Of course, like, but that's the point of the article in 2016 saying he'll turn on you without your full support. Correct.
Well, but no, like that, like remember, if you're not beholden to facts or truth and you're willing to say anything at any time, which, you know, I don't say this with admiration, but that is his strength. Like that, I look at that as a negative, as a for a person to be that way. But you can draw benefits from that. And the benefit of that is he's just trying to get his people to summarily dismiss it. He does not want them to read it. He does not want them to think about it, because if you read it and think about it, then it's like it's all of that stuff is real. And so
And that's exactly, I mean, look, that's what he's done with the media in general since day one, right?
What you say doesn't have to be true. You just try to get your people to not look at it.
Yeah. And it's working. I mean, look, I know this isn't about impeachment and all of the other issues, but the reality is, and that's the interesting thing about this Christianity Today article, the one that came out recently, is because it says, but the facts in this instance are unambiguous. And it just says the president of the United States attempted to use his political power to coerce a foreign leader to harass and discredit one of the president's political opponents. This is not only a violation of the Constitution, more importantly, it is profoundly immoral. And at the end of the day, taking everything else out of this, that's a fact, what they just said.
Yeah.
But to your point, the president has done a great job and has been very effective in creating, it's us versus them, you're on my side or you're against me.
Correct.
And that's what's led me in this last few years. Like, I was looking at the president in the first 6-12 months of his administration and like, okay, you know, I see the behavior, this and that. After that, I started looking at everyone else.
Yeah.
The president is what he is. I'm not here to criticize or support or not support him, because at this point, we all see what he is.
Here to criticize him and to not support him, but I don't do so reflexively. I'm doing it based on what, you know, is actually. Go ahead.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like he is what he is. I'm not here to start putting my thoughts about him personally, because we all see what he is. And that's the interesting thing going back to this article. There's a part near the end where, you know, the article the opinion piece from Christianity Today, you know, like anything else, broken up to a beginning, middle, and an end. And near the end, they speak to their own readers, like the Christian community. And it says, remember who you are and whom you serve. Consider your justification of Mr. Trump's influences. Consider how your justification of Mr. Trump influences your witness to your Lord and Savior. Consider what an unbelieving world will say if you continue to brush off Mr. Trump's immoral words and behavior in the cause of political expediency. If we don't reverse course now, will anyone take anything we say about justice and righteousness with any seriousness for decades to come? That to me was profound. And then at the very end was, it will crash down on the reputation of evangelical religion and on the world's understanding of the gospel. And it will come crashing down on a nation of men and women whose welfare is also our concern. And I found that fascinating, because I've said this to some of my friends who are very conservative politically, that they better be careful, because Donald Trump can set the conservative movement back, you know, if this doesn't go well. And I know
that only works if people are trying to, for either Christianity, if they're trying to spread the morality, or if they're talking about the morality, or for the conservative movement, if they're trying to win the battle of ideas. If they're just trying to control and win, then it won't. You win some, you lose some, and they're winning some now, and they're going to lose some in the future because of this. But they got these wins now, so you know, like it's. I don't think that. I mean, you're looking to, and I think this is a good thing. You know, like you're looking to folks as being pure in their intentions, as far as what they're telling you their intentions are really their intentions. I'm saying that's not always the case. Sometimes, and Trump makes this stuff transparent, which is it actually reveals. Like you said, don't look at Trump. Look at the people who support him, and their intentions become transparent. If they're about control, they're not bothered by his acts. If they're about the morality of it, the Christianity piece, Today piece lays it out. Like, yes, there's problems from the morality standpoint, and those are unavoidable. And so it allows you to see other people's priorities, which it's a free country. People are allowed to have different priorities, but we're also allowed to look at them and say, hey, well, then all the other stuff you're talking about clearly isn't that important to you. Yeah. What's more important to you is winning, you know, votes and changing laws so that you can control other people, you know, or you can control other people, what other people do. So, I mean, that's, it, it's, nonetheless, the fissure, as you pointed out, is this is something that's interesting. Like we've both read, you know, Tipping Point, you know, things like that, where like things don't start all at once, you know. And so it'll be interesting to see over the next 10 months whether this is the beginning of something and whether other people start saying, hey, I don't know if I'm okay with the anything goes approach to trying to, you know, do the ends justify the means. But, you know, human beings, a lot of people are okay with ends justify the means. So we'll see. So, yeah, well, I mean, I think that, you know, it was an interesting month for sure. And like I said, we'll be able to get touch on impeachment, you know, because there's a lot with that to talk about. We'll do that, you know, in the coming weeks. You know, if you haven't checked out yet, check out the Outliers Culture Series. That was a good one. You know, we've gotten a big response from that one. So and always, you know, subscribe, you know, rate, review. You know, we definitely appreciate you guys, you know, the audience, you know, joining us for these. And, you know, until next time, I'm James Keys.
And I'm Tunde Ogumana.
All right. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.